This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman.
And we're having 20-minute talks with entrepreneurs teaching you how to launch your product into revenue.
Check out our book at howtobuildarocketship.com to reserve your launch discount and to download a free chapter. Today we talked with Thomas from Blossom.io. We learned all about how their product was born out of frustration with their current tools and how they think differently about product management. Thomas doesn't blindly pursue test-driven development or follow a given agile practice. He picks the right tool for the job and avoids process, at least in the early days, at all costs. He also taught us a bit more about jobs to be done and how we can apply it with our own products.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. We're here with Thomas from Blossom.io. Thomas, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about where you guys came up with the inspiration for Blossom.
Yeah, that's a great question. So Alan, Nick, and me, we worked in a marketing agency, did high-traffic Facebook applications for brands like Red Bull. It was really interesting to work on those because if you do Facebook applications for high brands, you will have interesting traffic patterns. Like, there will, like, when the campaign starts, you'll see spikes where you have to add server resources very fast, and it's like super exciting. But at the moment, when we worked for the marketing agency, we were really frustrated with the project management tools that we were using, because we were a cross-functional team, and most of the project management tools were more designed for engineering teams only. And we shipped in very fast release cycles. So we shipped dozens or even hundreds of times per day, whereas most of the project management tools were more based around like sprints, like Scrum sprints, where you ship only once every few weeks. So that wasn't a really good fit. And probably the most painful thing for us was that we were a distributed team across many time zones. So most of the project management tools that we used, they weren't really helping with the being distributed aspect. So they were all built for teams that basically are co-located, work in the same room, have their daily stand-up meetings, and where a lot of the communication just happens because you're in the same room. And yeah, that was basically sort of the main motivation for us to look into how project management works and how we can create a better project management tool for people like us. And the worst case scenario would be like we have our own project management tool that we can use.
So you guys had this idea when you were working at the agency.
Right.
You start building it in your spare time. At what point did you leave to focus on it full time?
That's a great question. So we worked on it like in the early mornings or in the late evenings, basically. And then once we had something that was a bit more concrete, it was still a bit buggy, like an early prototype. It didn't behave like we wanted it to behave, but we had something that we could show around, and we showed it to some of our friends that were all also like naturally software developers. And that was basically the first spark where we saw, okay, there's something there. It's not only us that are fed up with the project management tools. Our friends are as well, and they liked where we were going. And then some of our friends from Vienna recommended us to check out an accelerator program called SeedCamp, which is a European accelerator program, because like the main advice was, okay, you're all software developers and designers, and you are really good at building products. But if you want to build a business out of it and work on it full time, then it makes sense to get some, like, not do an MBA, but do basically like a crash course on the business aspects, like how do you do marketing, how do you do sales, how do you charge money, stuff like that, like things that we didn't concern ourselves up until then.
So with Blossom, why do you think that it's better? What does it do that that really excels above what none of the other tools did before?
There's a few aspects, but I think the main aspect is in terms of how we think of designing the product. So we basically, our North Star in making design decisions is the distributed team. And if you try to solve problems that distributed teams have that are not in the same time zone even often, a side effect is that you will solve problems for teams that are even if you're co-located, all the features that are good for distributed teams are good for you as well. So one example that that came out of that was our daily digests. So we basically in the project management tool try to understand what's going on, who's working on what, why people are working on it, and you can mark things as blocked, for example. And having that information allows us to create a digest or like a tactical briefing that people would usually use in a stand-up meeting. So in a stand-up meeting, you basically go through, is there anything that's blocking you and hinders you on making progress? What are the things that you've worked on that are good to know for other people? And what will you be working on next? And how do you think on like attacking that problem? And these three aspects basically they are fine and easy to communicate if you're in a stand-up meeting and if you're co-located, but if you're distributed about among many time zones, it's really, really hard to get a good time for all of the people, and there will always be problems. Like, someone needs to get up early, take a meeting with a customer, and you can't be like super on top of your mind at the meeting of the customer at 9 a.m. in the morning when you have been in a stand-up meeting, in a virtual stand-up meeting, until 4 a.m. in the morning. So the basically one of the things we did was just assembling the information we have in the project management tool in a way that it can actually replace a stand-up meeting if you have no chance of actually pulling a stand-up meeting off, or if the trade-off of making a stand-up meeting would be really high. And the fun side effect of that is that if you do stand-up meetings, it's still awesome because you wake up in the morning, you get an email, which is basically a briefing for you for the stand-up meeting, so you don't forget the important things to talk about. So I think, like, the, in a nutshell, what really helps us to do a good job with the product is to overstretch by design, to really try to solve the pain points for the people who have the highest pain points. And as a side effect, it will be also a better product for people who are in the same room, who are just basically have their headphones on, listening to music, or are in the same company but on different floors. It's the same problems. It's just different pain levers, I guess.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
So with that, with the kind of identifying the pain beyond your own kind of building it for yourself perspective, what did you guys do to kind of put those user stories together and learn how people would go about using your product, or learn the methodologies that you wanted to teach inside of your product?
That's a brilliant question, because I think that's one of the hardest things in product management in general. Is deciding what you want to work on and then specifying how, like, what you're actually doing and why you're doing it. Because you can be working very efficiently without working very effectively. Mm-hmm. With user stories, so I think user stories are great to begin with. There's a lot of companies that basically work without user stories. They just start with things that they thought about but did not take the step to actually put down in words. So I think starting with just communicating what you want to build and why you want to build it, that's incredibly valuable. It's not a waste of time, not at all. But I've seen a lot of patterns with user stories where people basically fill out the user story format just to have it filled out, just to cross something off a checklist. So people, they do user stories, but they don't do it in a, like, they don't give them the importance that they have. Because actually, like, once you've written a user story or started on something, chances are you will work hours and days and sometimes even many people on executing that thing that you set out to do, and they will make many, many trade-offs around that. And the trade-offs have to be based on something. And usually, like, ideally, they are based on the goals you want to achieve, the success criteria. And if the success criteria is poorly expressed, then there's no good basis on making these trade-offs. So one thing I've often seen is these user stories, like, user wants to edit a comment in order to be able to edit a comment, stuff like that. and like, I think like I'm definitely guilty of writing user stories like that. Because I did not grasp how expensive user stories like that can be later. So one super interesting concept is called job to be done or jobs to be done. And I first heard about it from Johan and Des from Intercom, the founders of Intercom. And it's basically a concept where you focus on the situations and the verbs, like the actions of what people are doing. So you don't focus on the persona or like who the person is, but what they're doing and why they're doing it, what their main motivations are. And the interesting thing with that is, so for example, with the standard user, to take one step back, with the standard user story format, you start with the user, and that primes you on who the person is and all your conceptions or misconceptions of that person, like an admin or a boss or whoever the person is. And it is really hard to empathize with people, and it's even harder to empathize with people that are not like you are. So starting with the person is hard. It just makes things hard. Whereas if you start with the situation and the emotional aspects and the motivations that people have, it's easier relate to. So it's easier to slip into the shoes of the person by thinking of the situation and the motivations instead of thinking of the person itself. And that's super, super simple, but super powerful as well. And one, just to give an example, there's the milkshake story, where basically a milkshake store tried to increase their revenues, and they were asking their customers like how the customers wanted to like have the milkshake changed in order to make it better, because they basically wanted to find out how they can make more money, how they'll get more business, how they can make their product better. So they asked all these people, and the people said completely different things. Like the people said, one of the people said that the milkshake is not thick enough. They want more fruity bits in there. It's too liquid. Other people said it's way too thick. They want a liquid milkshake. They don't want all these fruit bits in there. Takes too long to eat all the whole milkshake. So they did not really get to anything with that feedback. But then they basically hired a guy called Clay Christensen, who came up with the jobs to be done concept. And what they did is they did, again, ask the customers, but they asked them in a way to figure out what the job the milkshake was, what the job they tried to solve by hiring the milkshake. So every of the customers is hiring the milkshake to do a certain job for them. And by that they figured out that there are roughly two kinds of categories or two kinds of situations of why people hire the milkshake and what they hire the milkshake for. And one of them was the morning commute. So they basically had the situation where they drive in the car to work, takes like 30 minutes, it's boring, sometimes there's traffic congestion, and they are hungry, and they want to eat something, but they can't eat a pizza because that's a mess. They can't eat ice cream because that's a mess as well. Whereas the milkshake, you have a cap on it, you can hold it in one hand, there's a straw, and the milkshake does a good job. So the competition for the milkshake in that scenario is a lot of things that the company owner wouldn't even regard as competition. That's interesting. But another interesting thing is, since they know the milkshake will be hired for the morning commute, they suddenly know how to do a better job at the milkshake. So they can make the milkshake thicker. They can add things like even better caps, for example. They can try to make the morning commute, the 30 minutes, an interesting experience. Like if it's really thick and you have the fruity bits in there, there's like variable feedback for you as the milkshake user. It's more interesting. You can actually sip on it for 30 minutes. Whereas the other scenario where people bought the milkshake was for children after, so the parents have children and the children were asking the whole week, can I get this? Can I get that? Can I get this? And the parents always said, no, 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 no. And finally on the weekend, where they had more spare time again and time to like get off of the stress from the week, they finally gave in and basically said, okay, let's go for a milkshake. But in that scenario, you don't want a thick milkshake that is really huge and people sip on it for half an hour because the child will sip on it for 1 hour. So basically, having a better job for that scenario is smaller portions, dinosaurs on the outside of the milkshake, maybe a toy, and having it very liquid and fast to eat, basically. So having the concept, the context of where the customer is in, what the customer is trying to achieve, and what the main motivation drivers are. If you can nail these things in the user story, I think then you've won, because that's basically the same material that you would use when you write an announcement or do a marketing campaign. It's basically the single thread that keeps the whole thing together from marketing and sales and customer acquisition back into your product. It's like a single story.
Hey guys, hope you're enjoying the episode. I wanted to take a minute to thank CodeShip for sponsoring the show. We've been happy customers of theirs for a very long time. If you'd like to see how we use CodeShip to deploy our product Hookfeed, go watch the short video we put together at howtobuildarocketship.com/CodeShip. Enjoy the rest of the episode. So something that I know that we struggle with early on is taking huge development pushes and trying to break them up into user stories and then tracking them as they go along. Mm-hmm. It'd be really helpful for us because I'm the only one doing back end development, and a lot of times Joelle's just kept out of the loop. We don't put much effort into staying on the same page. So if we had a good way to estimate out different features or take a big push, like a big, say, adding analytics to a product, taking a big push like that and knowing how to break it up into smaller pieces would be tremendously helpful for the rest of the team. But a lot of times I struggle with that, and I'm wondering how jobs to be done would change that process. Like, do you not start with the big idea? Do you start with smaller pieces? And if that builds up to a big collection of changes, you push forward with that? Or
I might be a bit opinionated on that, but I actually think that the traditional user stories are too granular. So what I like to track, or like what people track in our tool, is more on the epic level. So it's kind of like a collection of user stories. And the Kanban people, or like the lean software development crowd, are calling these cards minimal marketable features. So you start basically, and Amazon, for example, is doing that, Twitter is doing that, Facebook is doing that. You start with an announcement. You basically write up the announcement of like what a good story would be for your customer. And then you take that and you track it as a whole ticket. And that might be something that is bigger than a few, that it's more than a user story. But the interesting thing is, by getting up to that abstraction level, a higher abstraction level, you suddenly get something that everyone understands, something that your customer understands. It's something that stakeholders understand. It's things that marketers understand. It's things that engineers understand. And it's things that designers understand. So for example, if I describe a minimum marketable feature as that we are integrating with GitHub, then there's different aspects or different meanings for every persona that is involved in that area. So the marketing people, for example, in the early stages of the feature, they would like look at competing companies, how they did the integration, what the values they are describing. So it's like a good trigger for research because you know what you're researching for. If you're a designer, you know what to look for when you do the design. When you're an engineer, you know what APIs you need to look for. Whereas with granular user stories, there's a lot of repetition where the user stories, if you track them separately, you'll have different people work on the same things, but on their specific user stories. So it can kind of get a mess process-wise because all of these things are actually related to a single thing you want to deliver, but you're tracking them independently. So it's hard to get an overview of how far it is along in the process. And I think having, or like being like not necessarily disciplined, but being aware of the advantages of having or finding an abstraction layer that works for all of the people that are involved in product creation, that helps a lot. And then you can basically collect specific user stories in that thing you're tracking. But you want to at all times have an overview of how far along you are in the process on shipping that thing. There's not a lot of value in knowing where you stand with a certain user story or a certain task that ties back to the overall thing. Because only when you ship the whole thing, the actual value is delivered.
That's really interesting. I haven't thought about it quite like that. And actually, one of the things that I know you guys are doing a lot of is spending time on Quora. And I assume that that was just more of an outward push where you're kind of establishing yourself as the expert on these issues that are coming up for people and trying to pull people back to your site. But I'm curious now, is that your way of kind of mining for some of these user stories and looking for where to take the product next?
Yeah, so that's super fascinating. So actually, like using Quora as a marketing channel, that was basically happened by accident because I just played around with Quora and I like these Q&A platforms and I was a bit of a Stack Overflow addict. And when it came out, I answered a lot of questions and it was a lot of fun. So I just basically did the same on Quora, but then we figured out Quora is way, way, way more valuable than just for entertainment or like just answering questions. Because yeah, like you said, there's a lot of, in these Q&A formats, they are really good in facilitating the conversation on specifics. And that's a great resource for product ideas or feature ideas, because you always have the context and you always, it's basically a brilliant format of a question and different people answering the question and providing their take on it. So sometimes you have like the two top answers will be completely controversial on polar opposites. So it's great input, or often like in more popular questions, it will be very eloquent, very great answers. So it saves you a lot of research time. So you don't miss things that you might miss if you just start on building a certain feature. And also you always have, like I said earlier, super important to understand the motivations that people have, the situations they find themselves in. And Quora basically is like, you're just one click away of understanding more about that person. Every person that answers has a Quora profile, has answered other questions, follows certain topics, has a Twitter account, has a LinkedIn account. So you're just one click away of really immersing yourself in the world of the person who wrote the answer. So context is king, right? Context is that, like, the only way, or like the only way from my point of view in a nutshell to create a great product is to create the right product for the right situations that people find themselves in. And if you don't have context, you will have a hard time doing a good job on that. So Quora is a brilliant platform for that. Also, public feedback forums or support forums from companies that are in the same space, whether they are competitors or partners, or basically anyone who's in the same space. And for SaaS B2B products, that's basically a gold mine, because most of the SaaS productivity tools, you're not living in a vacuum, right? You're integrating with a lot of these other tools. So you're just serving a part of the overall workflow. So understanding the whole workflow and how people see the workflow and what the pains are they are perceiving, that's super valuable. And Quora is basically a gold mine for that. But we then found out that by answering questions on Quora, people also signed up for our site and started paying. So when we looked at Kissmetrics and the revenue in table, the referral, the revenue sources, basically, Quora was one of the sources that gave us the least amount of traffic. So it was a very low traffic source, but a high revenue source. So Quora was converting like crazy. So basically that was, okay, why is that? And then basically how I understand it is, Quora just sends super highly qualified leads, because the Q&A format basically is like, when you have a question or a problem to solve, chances are you will Google it, or you will tweet about it and ask people. And the first thing that usually pops up, at least in the topics that Quora is really good at, is a Quora question and an answer, and or many answers even. And by answering questions on Quora, just as a side effect, I could reach the people at the right point in time. And with productivity tools, like, people say, yeah, they're never happy with their current productivity tool. Everyone is always on the lookout. But on the other hand, people don't really switch just because there's no reason. There needs to be a trigger. There needs to be a motivation that is higher than the barrier to switch. And reaching people in the right point in time is super, super important. And by doing basically ads, it's really hard to reach people at the right point in time. Whereas when they search for something, you have intent, and that's super powerful. That's also why Google is doing so well in the ad business, I guess. They always know what you want, what you're looking for.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this with us. Tell us, where can we keep up with you and Blossoms online?
So I've started to play around with Medium, which is a really, really cool publishing platform. And I found out that I publish way more on Medium just because it's lower friction. And I've started a Medium collection called Product Love, and it's on medium.com/product-love. So you can subscribe to that. It's basically blog posts from the best product people I find. Like Julie, who's heading product at Facebook. There's a really cool UX design article in there on how Yelp redesigned their restaurant, or like the business listings page. There's a lot of really cool stuff in there. So basically I just add things to that collection. And on Twitter, we're blossom_io.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for having me. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you haven't yet, pop open iTunes and subscribe to be notified of future episodes. We have some really great ones lined up.
And while you're there, leave us a review. We really appreciate each and every one of them. Nothing feels like that.